Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Did people go to the moon in 1969? I'm not totally sure. I wasn't on the moon then. Did they fake going to the moon? No, I'm pretty sure they didn't, because they couldn't. Some people say that in 1969, people were incapable of sending a man to the moon, but that they were capable of staging the whole thing in a TV studio. In fact, the opposite is true. By the late 1960s, they did have the technical ability, not to mention the requisite madness, to send three guys to the moon and back. They did not have the technology to fake it on video. Now, please understand, I'm not saying this to defend the honor of the United States. The U.S. government lies all the time about all kinds of things, and if they haven't lied to you today, maybe they haven't had coffee yet. So it's easy to believe the Apollo program was a lie, too, especially if you weren't alive then, and if you don't know much about the technology profiles of the day. You see, the later you were born, the more all-powerful movie magic seems. Nowadays, it would be very easy to fake a moon landing, and we seem to have forgotten how to do it for real. Back then, it was the other way around, really.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a pierogi's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes, and true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. He's a legendary, charismatic megafauna in his own mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Good planets are in the main. Right.
All I have to say is, yikes! Did you see this crossover here between shows, Denny?
It was done well, though.
And you just sit there observing the whole thing. It's not like you...
I could have helped. I realized that. I could have done something.
It's okay. Don't worry about it. We got like eight people out of the studio and another eight people back into it. And wow! So, good morning, everybody. And it's snowing outside. I think we're in a winter wonderland here.
Finally. And it's measurable snow.
A measurable snow. I shoveled snow.
Twice.
Once for me, but.
I'm eager.
Oh, my goodness. Twice. And we're all very happy about it. Isn't that weird?
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Isn't it cool? It's cool to have snow. Everybody's like, yay. I just had to play that piece at the beginning of the show, which I found and posted on Facebook earlier in the week, right at the top of the week. Yeah, this seems like the longest week ever in my life. I don't know why. Just so much went on this week. Partly the basement almost flooding on Tuesday. That didn't help. But we averted that catastrophe. And I got to thank Rick DeMaio for that. Who will be on? Wait. DeMaio should get a ding. Because in the back of my tiny pea brain, there was, I remember Rick saying, oh, yeah, along about Tuesday, we're going to have a lot of rain. I got up Tuesday morning and I turned on the Weather Channel. And the first thing I saw was flood warning, flood watch for your area. And I thought, oh, that's not good. So I went down to the basement and there was already water standing where the drain is. Yeah. And Dennis Browning here in the studio is wincing because she knows what that's like, I think. I got a feeling she knows what that's like. So there's already water. And I thought, wait a second, it hasn't started raining yet. This is not good. And they were telling us we were going to get 2 inches of rain. And I thought, oh, dear, this is not good at all. So I started getting on the horn and trying, you know, called Ron Cowgill immediately. And he said, well, I got a guy who could come out and maybe help you out. And I said, let's do it now. And so that guy wasn't available. And meanwhile, I'm going to the hardware store to try to put up a pipe, a standpipe, so the water will rise up through the standpipe. Well, there's already water, so I can't connect it to anything. And now it's starting to rain a little bit, and now there's, you know, 3 inches of water in the center of the basement. And Kathleen goes out and finds this guy. She goes to the local hardware store, and I love what she said. She said, I played helpless little old lady. She played helpless little old lady and stood there. Well, we need help. The water's coming into our basement right now, and we really have to call somebody. And so the guy broke down and gave her a name. We called the guy, Carl. Carl shows up at 4:30. It's already starting to pour rain, and the water's rising in the basement. And he goes, like 100 feet of router. And then, bam, breaks through, and all the water starts to drain down. I mean, that is how close we cut it on Tuesday. And everybody in the studio is going, yeah, yeah. We've done that, been there. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You guys all have had that same experience,
oh,
right?
Yes.
Like at the last minute. And as the guy's finishing up, the skies open up. And then it rained forever, it felt like. And none of it came into the basement.
So now you tend to have trouble. Is this a permanent solution?
Well, I was talking to Mr. Cowgill about that. Because his guy came out and routed the place 5 months ago. Hmm. Same thing, from the house to the street. And so he thinks there's got to be what he's thinking, because they didn't come up with tree roots. Because usually, you know, if you dig that thing, they'll pull it back. And not paper, you know, because the other guy, Carl, who came out, said, well, I'm usually looking for...
Uh-oh. That doesn't mean a rotted line.
He thinks maybe a break in the line where sediment is getting in.
Yeah.
And then every few months it builds up and blocks everything up. And so, but he's got this guy with this technique. If you put this, this is Ron Cowgill from Mighty House on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, Sunday mornings. Saturday mornings. Used to be Sunday mornings. Saturday mornings, 8 to 11. Anyway, he says he's got this guy. He puts this liner in, and they route it through, and they only need to open up on either end. So they go to the street and open up, and they go inside and open up, and then they send this thing through and then inflate it, and it becomes this liner for your pipe.
Oh, that sounds much better than digging.
Than digging up the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about that.
Well, of course, Ron Cowgill's got a guy.
He's always got a guy.
No matter what, his guy
on Tuesday was busy, so that's why we got Carl, the neighborhood guy, and I am so happy that Carl, the neighborhood guy, showed up.
Well, I've met Kathleen, and I can't imagine the helpless. That was good acting. There's nothing helpless about Kathleen.
Excellent acting. Excellent acting. I mean, Academy Award stuff, okay? So I interrupted myself to say that the top of the show was this guy on Gizmodo, why the moon landings could never, ever have been faked, could have never, ever been faked, the definitive proof. And I saw that and just went, oh, I got to post this. And for all you people, for all you knuckleheads out there who think that the moon landings were faked, you know, and you're the same people who think that, you know, the cavemen wandered around with dinosaurs 6,000 years ago, you knuckleheads. This is the definitive proof. And it's so simple. And his whole proof is that in 1969, we had the technology to put people on top of tons of tons of explosive fuel and send them 240,000 miles away. But we did not have the technology to put it on film. We did not have the technology. The film technology did not exist.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you can even watch Star Wars from the late 70s and go, boy, that's pretty clunky. Mm. Now, then to go back and look at the moon landing videos and say, which were actually in some ways more sophisticated, mm-hmm. and say, no, that was fake, no. And so you got to see this. It's great. All right. We got lots to do today. And I've got a ton of people here in the studio. It's Super So Sunday. Woo! Whatever that means. For you people not on Twitter, Super So, that flash better go off. Come on. Come on. Oh, she's got it. Okay. You even have your PR people here. I have the Wicker Park Garden Club people, Dennis Browning here. Say hi, Dennis.
Hi.
Okay. And Richard Tilley.
Hi.
Hello, Richard.
He's got a bit of an English accent. He's our English gardener.
Oh, he is. And Richard's been on the show before, and I love Richard. And those of you who know the Wicker Park Garden Club, you got to know and love these people because they've done such good work at Wicker Park over the years, planting and educating as well. I mean, your seminars are top notch. They're probably the best in the city out of any garden club.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I know you work hard, and I know
Doug Wood works
hard, but you all work hard. And I will get to the Seed Keeper Company gals who are also here in their boots.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Can we get a shot of the boot? I know we've got the press people here. We got to get a shot of the boots. Where are they?
Oh, man.
She's in the hallway.
I told her I'm going to throw her in there on the break.
All right. Well, she's coming right now.
There's some yoga moves happening.
She said go on
here.
We're represented also by the Seed Keeper Company. Yeah, here's the press. The paparazzi are here in the studio.
Again.
All right. I want a shot of those boots.
All right.
Because I'm going to post those on Facebook. And, oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. She's just getting shot of the boots, not the people in them.
That's all we want.
It's okay.
We are the boots.
But that's okay. So while Carol and Carrie are having their photos taken, I want to go to Richard here, because Richard Tilley from Wicker Park Garden Club, he told me as he walks in today, you know, I knew you were 80 plus.
Yeah.
But you're how old?
I'll be 87 in about 2 months.
87. And you're the youngster of the family.
No, the baby of the family will be 84.
And your brother?
95.
Wow.
I want those jeans, okay? I want those jeans. How do I get those jeans?
You got all the right parents.
darn it. I hate it when that happens. Wow. And how long have you been planting seeds?
Well, I started helping my father when I was about 12. And apart from an interruption in the military, World War II, and when I came to Chicago in 62 until I got a garden in 76. So basically, since I was 12 years old, with a couple of interruptions.
So you know something about seed starting, that's for sure.
Yes.
And it's interesting because I mentioned, so I was on the Growing Green segment on Mighty House yesterday and mentioned a little bit about seed starting, and I got a nice email from my friend Dan Costa at Vern Goer's Greenhouse in Hinsdale and said, you know, it's kind of early, but you're saying not for all seeds.
Not for all seeds. You've got to put them in sequence. I have planted my geraniums, and they're just coming through. But I tell you what.
Wait, you've already. When did you start the seeds for the geraniums?
I can tell you for my database.
He's got his database here.
I planted them on the 21st of January.
That's my birthday.
Oh, that's why they're doing well.
All right.
And they germinated.
It's the most depressing day of the year. I don't know if you realize that.
I remember that.
And they germinated on the 28th.
Which one on the 28th?
Geraniums.
Oh, so you had some on the 21st and some on the
28th? No, I sowed them on the 21st. They germinated.
Oh, they germinated on the
28th. Oh, I keep very close records.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's very important. I needed to keep records. I used to keep notes in diaries.
Yeah.
And it got very difficult to pull the information out. And I couldn't find a database, which I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So I created my own in Microsoft Access. And as I'm using it, I made it idiot-proof.
Well, have you marketed this?
I don't know how to market.
Ooh, we have to talk. Richard, we need to talk. Okay, Pat? I need a way to become rich.
Yeah.
All right? And because I'm in radio.
I think it's a unique database. I've never seen anyone like anything like it.
And it, I'm serious. We got to do something with this.
There's something to figure out here. If nothing else, to afford a third hour of the Mike Novak show.
Well, I can hardly deal with two right now.
You see, if you put anything in error, let's say I enter a catalog number and supplier, and if I enter the same catalog number, the same supplier, it says you can't do that. It traps and very much error trapping. I did it because I'm going to use it and. Sometimes I make mistakes.
You know, and I've seen the database because I took your seed starting class, which you're offering this year on...
Oh, yes.
March 2nd.
March 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
So the point I want to make, folks, is for a lot of seeds, don't worry. You got plenty of time. You know, the vegetable seeds, they're going to come later. Some of the specialty seeds, like you said, geraniums, they take 6 months from planting to
flowering. Yes, so they flower in June.
You're a patient man, aren't you?
Well, you vary, because some of the seeds I plant as late as April. That's where this database comes in useful.
Uh-huh. So what plant seeds are you planting in January and February?
February, I'll plant begonias, and it must be something to do with me. I plant three varieties: whiskey, vodka, and gin.
Are you serious? Those are real varieties.
That's the first they are real the varieties.
Wow! You need to know how to grow gin.
And wait a second. I think I've discovered the secret to his longevity right there. Okay.
Yeah, get pickled. I plant antirrhiniums and petunias in February.
And then most of the rest of the stuff comes in March.
March is a big planting month.
All right. You've already planted by March a lot of seeds. How many seeds total are you planting these days?
Count those. It's a lot.
He grows usually about 3,000 plants a year.
I grow them under grow lights in the basement.
Uh-huh. Where do you fit 3,000 plants? I mean,
I've got a big basement.
I do too, but it's filled with junk and almost got filled with water this week. But
no, they're permanently wired on a timer. But what I do, I have, how many grow lights do I have? I have 24 pair of grow lights.
Okay, let's ask a quick question about grow lights. Do anything special other than a shop light, or do you like the full spectrum, or what?
I've tried the full spectrum, and what I do, I have these ordinary shop lights with two lights in. I put one warm white and one cool white, and I find that does a very good job.
Rather than the full spectrum?
The full spectrum are very expensive. They don't have a very long life.
Uh-huh. And the others do seem to do just as well.
A couple of years. I find, one thing you've got to do with the grow lights, they're hanging on chains. You've got to keep them close to the plants. Mm-hmm. You, as the plants grow, you raise the lights.
I think that may be the key to the light. Now, there's other keys to moisture and that sort of thing, but in terms of light, yes, I know this from experience, and you obviously do. You got to keep them really close, and we're talking 6 inches.
Yeah, 6 inches max.
Yeah.
Max, right. You know, and you can get them closer. You don't want them touching, but you want it as close as you can, which means that you got to be paying attention. And as the plant grows, you have to raise the light, so you can't...
That is correct.
Is it the heat, or is it the light that is promoting the germination?
The germination, I have what they call them, these boxes, the heated... I can't think of the name of it now. It's a heated tray.
It's a tray or bed where, that you can put the your seed packs on, right?
But they have these high domes, and I don't like those because the high dome is about 8 inches tall. That means your lights can't get close.
Oh, so I put that's too tall. You're right.
Yeah, I put a flat piece of plexiglass in, so I'll get the lights close down.
Interesting.
And I usually try and maintain a temperature about 70. Most plants, seeds might...
70 for germination or for growing?
Germination. Once they germinate, I tend to take them out the plant. Otherwise, you get weak and spindly. And when they...
They're cooler when they grow.
Yeah. So
you want to germinate them. And again, anymore. It depends on the plant because different plants require different germination temperatures.
Yeah,
And you've got your database there.
Yeah, this is where I plant them in.
Okay. And for you folks listening on the radio, he's holding up a square that's about, I don't know.
3 by 6.
3 by 6 inches.
And I fill it with... seed starting mixture. And
when you say seed starting mixture, what do you like for seed starting mixture?
Am I allowed to say a name?
Sure.
I usually buy it from Garden Supply, their seed start. It's a very fine mixture.
Gardener Supply.
They're up in New England somewhere.
Yeah, I'm familiar with them. I'll have Sarah track them down here and we'll post on Twitter and Facebook.
And if you want a tip for sowing very fine seeds, I can give you one.
Yes, please.
Well, the big seeds, like platelet seed, I put in with a tweezer. But the very fine seeds, like dust, if you sprinkle them, they come up in great clumps. So what I do, I get some seed starting mixture, put it through a very fine kitchen sieve. And then sieve it. And put it into a pepper shaker. Then I put the seeds into the pepper shaker, shake them up, and then just use a pepper shaker to plant the seeds. Yeah. You get them much more even, especially those seeds which are like dust.
Yeah.
You as the seed people would know that.
Yes. That's right. And let me just say that's Richard Tilley from the Wicker Park Garden Club. He's here with Dennis Browning from the Wicker Park Garden Club, who spells it Denise, but why is it pronounced Dennis?
Just what my parents chose.
Oh, it's the old practical joker parents, huh?
I think it was probably a social thing, and they were giving women men's names like Carol O'Connor. Carol used to be a man's name. Somehow Dennis didn't catch along.
And, of course, sitting to their right are the Seed Keeper Company gals, and we're going to get to them in just a second here. I want to make sure that people understand, and thank you, Rob, for posting this on Twitter, that we're talking fluorescent lights when you're using those lights for germination and for growing. Now, there are other kinds of lights, high-intensity lights, that some people use. But that's more if you want to grow a tomato in the winter kind of deal. If you go to a place called Brew and Grow, they have those kinds of lights. Are you guys familiar with Brew and Grow?
I'm not.
It's this place in Chicago, and it's got various locations, and I'm going to have them on the show. I've been in there a few times, and they have the best organics around. They have all different brands of organics there, but they also have the most sophisticated lights that you can imagine. Oh. So if you're really, really into this, that's a place you want to go. And I got to get them on the show and talk about that. We're talking fluorescent lights. Keep them close to the plants. If you can keep them under 6 inches, it's going to seem really close. But that's because they're trying to approximate the sun's rays. And, you know, a fluorescent light is a long way from being a nuclear fusion. So,
if you have the lights too high, your plants will get long and spindly very quickly.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's talk very quick because you mentioned you like the seed starter from Gardener Supply. And there's other seed starters. I mean, that's just Richard's advice. That's what he likes. Okay. What about watering? Do you water from the bottom? Do you water from the top? What is it you do?
I water from the bottom.
From the bottom.
It avoids a lot of damping off.
And what is damping off?
When it gets very wet around the stems, and they'll rot.
Right. And those stems will just collapse, and you'll see they just turn brown.
Exactly.
And they...
This thing has got holes in the bottom.
Yes. Right. Always drainage. If you don't have drainage...
Oh, yeah, you must. It's essential.
You're done. Yeah. And do you also set up fans in the basement?
I do it occasionally because I grow a lot of Brugmansia from cuttings for the garden club. And I find they're very susceptible to spider mite and things and fungus. So if you have a current of air, it does help.
Okay. And the other thing I understand about putting a fan in the basement for seed starting is that it makes the stalks tougher
that I like. It's like being outside. When plants grow outside, they wave back and forth, and they get tough. You know, there are for tropicals. Here's a tip for your tropicals that I learned years ago. Every now and then, you got a big tropical in your house. Go up and shake it. Just shake it for a while.
Oh.
And it toughens this, you know, it's like the action of the wind, because you have no wind in your house, generally. So if you just do that, not so all the leaves fall off, but, you know, give it a little shake for a while. And you do that, it actually helps the plant. All right, so Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Let's take a real short break, and then we got Seed Keeper Company gals here. See, on this side, we have the people who are growing the stuff. On this side, we have the people who are storing and collecting the stuff and can teach you how to do it. And they're helping other people learn how to do that. So I'm happy to have everybody represented here in the studio, and we'll be back with the Seed Keeper gals and their boots in just a second.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Over the ground lies a mantle of white, a heaven of diamonds shine down through the night. Two hearts are thrilling in spite of the chill and the weather. Love knows no season, love knows no clime. Romance can blossom old time. Here in the open, we're walking and hoping together. Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lake, snow is glistening. A beautiful sight we're having tonight. Walking in a winter wonderland.
And everybody singing here in the city. Isn't that sweet? Well, you know, it is a winter wonderland out there. And see, this is not a Christmas song.
Yeah.
This is a winter song.
Took me a second.
Huh? Figure that out.
I was like, he must have played the wrong song, and he's playing it off pretty well.
No, it was on purpose. There was a method to my madness. It's snowing in Chicago, and I want to thank the folks who are listening in other parts of the country. We just got a really nice tweet from British Columbia. It's always great. Of course, Annie Haven in California is listening. We've just got all kinds of folks out there. And thank you, Lisa Albrecht, for posting about the Wicker Park Garden Club Seed Starting Workshop, which is Saturday, March 2nd. There are two sessions, one from 10 to 12 a.m., and then the other from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. Registration is required. It's only $15, and you're going to learn a lot. But there's only 15 students, room for 15 in each session. And RSVP to wpgarden@aol.com, and you pay at the door. So it's that simple. Hey, Seed Keeper Company gals.
Hi,
welcome.
Ian.
How you doing?
Great. How about you?
All right. Carol Neese and Carrie Rosenthal are here. And if you're on Twitter, you see them. You guys work that Twitter thing, don't you?
We're Twitterlicious.
We love social media.
In fact, they've been tweeting during the show.
Have they?
They, in fact, tweeted a picture of you.
I think, yeah. Oh my gosh! I didn't see that. Okay, I'll be looking for that. All right, for folks who don't, I mean, last week we had garden keepers. I am a tree keeper. What is a seed keeper?
Well, a seed keeper is a wonderful way to, it's a little bin that stores your seeds in A to C order and with monthly dividers, and all the A to Z dividers have garden information on them and really helpful, useful garden information, room for notes, and some great seed keeping tools. And it's a way to organize your seeds, and an organized seed starter is a more efficient seed starter.
Yeah, you know, you're looking at me and saying the word organized, and it just doesn't compute, okay?
I was the one who had to go hunt down my seeds wherever and, you know, then would find them later when they had lost their viability. And this really, it saves time, it saves money, it makes it really enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Like Richard, we've been starting seeds too, and so now I know exactly what I've planted, where I've planted, they're all organized.
And you're right, because if you're like me, and probably a lot of people, you get to February or you get to March, and then you start rummaging through paper bags.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And go, I know I had that, there's that one pack I'm looking for, oh yeah, I got those last year, I want to find those. And and here you are, you have this little case, and you have the deluxe version, and you have the farmer's version. What's that all about?
Yes, we have a home farmer now. It's called the Seed Keeper Home Farmer, and it has lots more room for a lot more vegetable seeds, and for that person who's got a little bigger garden and a lot more seeds.
So if folks are interested in this, they can obviously go to your website, which is
seedkeepercompany.com.
It's that simple. Seedkeepercompany.com. But it's not that simple in terms of what you've been doing. First of all, you're going all over the country promoting growing seeds, not just the Seed Keeper Company and your products, but getting schools on board. But you're also going to the Philadelphia Flower Show, and I am so jealous.
We are very excited.
Yes, we are.
Subaru is bringing
us. I got to interrupt. Richard, have you been to the Philadelphia Show?
Never.
Oh, my goodness. Let's go together. Richard, field trip. How about you and me?
Oh, yeah, good idea.
In the car. Yes. I can we'll 90 miles an hour down the turnpike. How's that?
I've been to the Chelsea Flower Show.
Oh, we're really jealous of that. Come on. Hey.
Which I think is the premier flower show. Uh-huh.
Yes. Well, if you've been to Chelsea, you probably don't need to see Philadelphia, do you?
Yes, you do.
You know? I guess you do.
Here's a little factoid. Our seed keeper has been at the Chelsea Flower Show.
Yes?
Yes. So that's kind of exciting.
Well, that's good.
It didn't take us with it.
We tried to get in the box. Couldn't work.
It's very small.
Yeah.
All right. But at Philadelphia, what are you going to be doing there?
We're going to be talking about the legacy of seed saving. And we will talk about Philadelphia and how integral it was in the whole seed starting and seed movement in the country, and all about what to do with seeds, how long they last, just a long-term, it's a good mm-hmm. one. It's
we'll
good
also one. Be talking about nutrition and the value of starting from seed versus mm-hmm. the 1,500 miles your vegetables travel to get to your stores. So we'll be talking about all the good reasons to start from seed.
Mm-hmm. And how to choose the right seeds for mm-hmm. your growing area. You know, that's a factor. You know, sun, soil, all of those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. You can't grow everything everywhere.
And collecting True. And saving them.
Yeah.
And the right ways to do that.
You're also going to be next week at the Wisconsin Garden Expo.
Yep. Yes, we are.
Where is that?
That's in Madison.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's from February 8th through 10th.
And then Prestige Nursery and Garden Center in West Chicago on the 23rd.
Yes, we'll be doing a little...
We're busy on the... Rob and I are busy on the 23rd. We've got the big commie garden FabCon. which is not the real name of it, as you might know, but that's... we're going to talk about that later in the show, by the way. Are you going to have a presence at the Chicago Flower and Garden Show?
We'll be there for the garden writers meeting. Up till now, that's what we're doing there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Just thought I'd ask.
We'll be hobnobbing.
I wasn't trying to, you know.
Nail us here.
To nail you. Right. But I did.
We're on it.
Yes.
Are you going to ask us about Seed Keeper Palooza?
No. Okay. That's all the time we have, folks. Hey. What about Seed Keeper Palooza?
I'm so glad you asked.
We are just thrilled to know. We have a very exciting announcement. Each year we take a trip called Seedkeeper Palooza. It's a chance for us to get out from behind our desks, and we travel through multiple states visiting garden centers and garden interesting things. Last year we went to Baker Creek Seed Company in Missouri, and this year we are so excited to say, drum roll please, Seedkeeper Palooza will be Journey to Moss Mountain, which is... P. Allen Smith's lovely farm abode in Little Rock, Arkansas.
You've been seduced by the P. Allen Smith...
hook, line, and sinker.
Oh, yeah, totally.
It's a beautiful place.
Tell him to invite me, okay?
It's a really beautiful place.
We'll fit you in our Seedkeeper.
So we're very...
Okay, I'm willing to stow away in it.
No problem. The home farmer, I think, would be for you.
You will be happy to know that our friend in British Columbia said, just has already tweeted, I didn't know about larger Seedkeeper, just what I need. So I get, what's my percentage on the sales here?
You're going to help us give them to schools. That's what you're going to help us do.
Yes. Okay. And let's talk about that a little bit, what you do for schools. Is it really in all 50 states?
All 50 states.
Wow.
Including Hawaii and Alaska.
And the District of Columbia.
Well, Hawaii
Columbia.
Is really just, I don't know, you know, Hawaii is just a province of Kenya. But
I lived there, and you can't imagine how many people come to visit and say, oh, I didn't know this was part of the United States.
And I lived in Alaska.
Please don't tell me that. You know, it's the same people who think we didn't go to the moon in 1969, I think.
I think so.
All right. So,
but our project is very special.
Yeah. So how does that work?
Well, when we started our company, we made a commitment that somehow we would find a way to give back. And at the one-year anniversary of the Seedkeeper, mm-hmm. we launched the Seedkeeper Project. We read a blog about Metro Curie High School here in Chicago and about the gardens that they were working on. And we said, oh, this is really cool. They're doing great stuff. Let's send them a Seedkeeper. So we sent them a Seedkeeper mm-hmm. and we went, hey, these school gardens need to be recognized. So that's what we do every year, all 50 states, District of Columbia, and Hawaii, you know. we recognize school gardens in each one of those states. And this will be our third year to do it. Our project's been recognized by the Department of Education, the U.S. Department of Education. It's a really cool thing, and we mm-hmm. are the winners in this. Mm-hmm. The stories that we get back are truly amazing. I mean, the people who are working with school gardens and teaching children the legacy of gardening are just heroes. They really are.
And these kids go home and teach their parents who haven't gardened because there's been a few generations that just dropped out of this. And now the kids are bringing this back to the parents.
And how do you find the time to, how many entries do you have in this? And how do they find out about this?
Well, on March 11th, we're going to be starting our Seedkeeper Project. And what we do is through Facebook and Twitter, each week we pull five states at random. And we say, please recommend a school in that state.
Okay, that's cool.
And so we would invite you to come on to our Facebook, the Seedkeeper Company, and nominate a state. When you see that state come up, nominate a school in that state. And they will receive a certificate of their achievement, honoring what they're doing, and a Seedkeeper for their efforts.
Well, that's just fabulous. So congratulations on doing that. And who won in Illinois last year? Do you remember?
It was the Jefferson...
Roosevelt High School.
Roosevelt, yes. I knew it was the president.
one of those. We got a tweet from Mudbaron here. He says, amazing how hashtag corny they all are without a single mention of heirloom maize. So he must be an heirloom maize. Richard, have you ever grown anything? Dennis, have you?
No. We've grown some heirloom seeds. We've mm-hmm. from different companies for flowering plants, but not for vegetables.
Yeah, well, that's one way to go, too, is heirloom vegetable plants. That's mm-hmm. a big deal. As a matter of fact, a few weeks ago, and I just remembered this. I should have remembered it yesterday. I posted on my site a list of heirloom companies where you can get your heirloom seeds. And it was this wonderful list that somebody had. Do you think you can find that?
I'll find it in the archives and repost it on Facebook.
Yeah, see if you can get it up
there.
Because I think people, do you remember that list?
I do.
Okay.
It was very colorful.
It was. And it was a great list of heirloom companies. Mm-hmm. And these are companies you should know that sell heirloom seeds. And if you want to know what an heirloom seed is, basically it's a seed that can be pollinated, that self-pollinates, and that you can take the seed and harvest it at the end of the season and replant it the next season, unlike an F1. Which you have to buy,
right?
And
hybrid.
So, are you much of what kind of seeds you get, Richard?
I have grown heirloom tomatoes. That's about all.
What are your favorite heirloom tomatoes?
I've got to think about it. It's been some time since I grew one, but I can't remember.
Okay,
that's a problem of getting old.
Cherokee Purple is a great one.
Cherokee Purple, yes, I'm familiar with that. I think
Brandywine.
Brandywine.
I just ordered that one.
Black Brandywine is exceptional.
You know, everybody has their favorite tomatoes, heirloom tomatoes. They're all, you know, it's like a secret club with heirloom tomatoes. We're just about out of time here. I want to know if I've missed anything on tips for gardening that, like Dennis or Richard, is burning a hole in your head that you want to get out.
Yes, I'll give you one quick tip. When you're transplanting your seeds into pots or anything else,
yes,
handle the seedlings by the leaves, not the stem. If you squish a leaf, it'll get over it. If you squish the stem, it's gone.
Oh, that's a really good point. Well, okay, but that brings up a good point, that a lot of people grow stuff like you do in a 3x6 container, which means that you're going to have to transplant those.
Yes.
Do you dig them out with a teaspoon or something?
I dig them out with an old screwdriver, a very complicated tool.
You're our kind of guy. I love that.
And you don't. What you got. So are roots pretty tough about that? I mean,
I've had no problem with that because. The seed starting mixture is very loose anyhow,
yeah.
So it comes out easy.
Which is why you want a premium seed starting mixture.
And
don't use your garden soil from your backyard.
Oh, No. And I transplant them into a potting mix. And one little trick about putting them into the potting mix, I make a hole in a pot with a pencil or something, drop the roots in, then pour water in it. It washes the seeds around the soil, around the roots, and instead of pressing it in.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
See?
That's an old trick.
But this is why you want to go to the seed starting workshop at Wicker Park.
Absolutely.
On March 2nd and get a wealth of information from Richard Tilley.
I demonstrate all this.
Very good.
Oh, yeah.
You know what?
I should
bring my video camera, and we could put these on YouTube.
Fine, no problem.
And then I could, and then you and I could work on that database, and we can get rich. You know, you're laughing
and give all this and give all this up.
Right. Get rich and give up showbiz.
We're in on this too, you know.
No. Richard and I are buddies. We go way back. I want to thank you all for coming into the studio today. Any last words from the Seed Keeper gals in there? Did you get a good shot of the boots? Did we get a good shot of the boots?
Hopefully.
Okay, we hope so.
Well,
we're going to be posting that on Facebook.
It's seed starting time, so it's definitely time to get those seeds organized and figured out. Get your heirloom seeds out. If you're planning on saving seeds, you want to use heirloom seed varieties if you plan on saving seeds.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of people are going towards that. You know, there are advantages and disadvantages, as you all know, that some of the hybrids protect the tomatoes are protected more against diseases like verticillium wilt and fusarium wilt and some of the other, and that's why they developed some of those hybrids.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a reason those heirlooms are still around, and is that they're wonderful tomatoes. And if you have good cultural techniques, you can grow those without any problems.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, then when we get to that season, we'll talk about the good cultural techniques. Did you track that down yet, Lisa?
There's too much to listen to. I can't listen and research at the same time. I'll do it in a commercial break.
I just have to say, just grow something. Just try it.
I'll agree.
Give it a whirl. It's not so hard. It really isn't.
And you're going to get failures.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But don't do it too often. Same thing too often. If a seed doesn't work, you don't try it again.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And replant.
Exactly.
Resow.
So thank you all, Carrie Rosenthal, Carol Neese, Dennis Browning, Richard Tilley, and it's Super Soul Sunday. If you want to get involved in that, if you're a Twitter person, and some of you are and some of you aren't, it's hashtag Super Soul Sunday. And people are going to be tweeting all day.
It starts at 6:30 tonight, I think.
Is that what it is?
Yeah,
6:30
to 8:30. 5:30 yes. Central, I think, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
5:30 Central.
Right around the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's so fun. You learn so many things. It's a cool thing.
And you can always go back and look at the tweets.
Yes.
You know, if you don't have to get them in real time, you know.
You should read the transcript. That.
All right. Thank you all, and happy sewing in 2013.
Thanks, Mike.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Did you know that prospective home buyers decide if they are interested in a home within the first 2 minutes of seeing it? Trees and landscaping have everything to do with that first impression, adding immensely to a home's curb appeal. They can add as much as 20% to a home's value, and the Care of Trees can help you sell your home faster and obtain top dollar for it by ensuring that your home landscape is as attractive as possible. Even relatively minor expenditures on landscape improvements can pay off. Pruning, mulching, edging, and replacing damaged shrubs can make a big difference in the length of time on the market and the selling price. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We, at this time, as always, go to the phones, bring in meteorologist Rick DeMaio. How you doing, Rick, this morning?
Good morning, Mike. So a little bit of Stevie Winwood, right, and hashtag. So I'm thinking there's something that's obscuring the flow to my pipe here this morning.
I'll tell you, though, it's very sexy. You've got that low voice going here this morning.
He has a wind chimes going. The wind chimes going in the background, and that fake sound of the air blowing through, and you know, and how DJs used to, they would bring up the tune and then they would pull it back a little bit, and then you would reintroduce it the second time and then bring it up. You know what I'm talking about, right?
I don't know what you're talking about. Oh, hey. Ah, there's that music. Okay. And then now, here's our very own man, and he's a real man.
Yeah, there you go.
There he is,
you know,
Rick DeMaio.
Yeah, then you play Black Sabbath in reverse at 78 BC God, right?
Right. Exactly. You know, I never did that. I got to admit, I never did that.
No, you gotta try it every once in a while.
Okay,
right?
All right, I'm gonna devote a whole hour to it someday.
Yeah, on your own though, in the garage with the candles going and cats were nowhere to be found, right?
Okay, now you're getting weird on me here. Okay, so you mentioned that the next short time period here is going to be mm-hmm. kind of interesting in terms of the weather.
Yeah.
Well, it was snowing when I came into the studio this morning.
All of a sudden, it looks like wintertime. You know,
yeah, absolutely.
How often have we said that this winter?
No, not very well, except when the ground was frozen. But right, not a whole
right,
lot.
Right, and even last week, you know, I kind of predicted this, that you know the flood watch was a really more of a puddle watch because we had such rapid thawing of the top 3-4 inches of soil that you know the ground got a little spongy and we had several bursts of moderate to heavy rain. So the rain that did fall, I think, was extremely beneficial, Mike, to the area, water tables, some of the rivers. I mean, we got almost 2 inches of rain. And I would say that a good 90% of that, you know, was able to infiltrate down into the topsoil. And then now it got locked up, with the recent cold weather and the snow on top of it. So this is good stuff. This was really, really needed, and we definitely got it at the right time, which was at the latter half of winter, which is what you want. You know, you're thinking all of a sudden, you know, 6 weeks from now is, you know, getting close to spring. And I always say, if you can get past that midpoint of February, you've really gotten past the roughest, harshest, coldest, you know, potential winter weather that you have. Not that we're going to have anything like that over the next 2 weeks, but it's going to stay on the nippy side, without a doubt.
Well, and the question seems to be, you know, how much water did end up in the soil and how much ended up in my basement? Not a lot in my basement. What?
Yeah, I guess the second question you can answer better than I can. But, I mean, a lot of the area rainfall totals, which if you think back to last Friday, okay, not the Friday that just came, last Friday, when we had that first inch of snow. And then Saturday was a beautiful sunny day. And then when we talked on Sunday, we talked about, you know, some of the sleet and the freezing rain. But not only that, we had thunderstorms late in the afternoon. I think, Mike, that was probably the second time in 28 years I've actually seen thunder freezing rain. And I'm looking out the window, and, you know, here's the air temperature, 31 degrees, sleet, freezing rain, and there's thunderstorms coming through. That's a very, very odd setup. Then we kind of quiet down a little bit, you know, even though we had a cool kind of foggy day on Monday. You know, we're right back up to 63 degrees on Tuesday. You know, we broke a record that it stood for 99 years. And when you really do the math, I think we've only had 33 days above 60 degrees during the month of Chicago since 1870. And just kind of offhand, that's about 4,100 days. Of potential days in January. And when you further do the math, it's like 0.08% of a chance of hitting a 60 degree day in Chicago in January. And I don't know if anybody remembers this, but I think it was the 2nd of December. It was a Monday or maybe the 2nd. I think it was a Monday. We had 70 degrees. I don't know if we could ever go back and look at a winter in Chicago where we had a temperature above 60 and above 70 in both December and January, let alone a temperature above 70 in December and a temperature above 60 in January. That's quite rare. And I think I haven't done the math yet. And maybe Pat Skatz can do this for us if you're listening. I think it'd be really interesting to see if that kind of, you know, those numbers actually, you know, have been achieved in the past.
Well, it's all part of the new norm, it seems like. I mean,
And the new norm seems to be, I don't know what, you know, we go from, you know, from wicked cold on, or at least wicked warm on Tuesday, to wicked cold on Wednesday and Thursday. And then highs only in the single digits with, you know, snow coming through a couple of times. Obviously we missed the one on Wednesday, really good snowfall across Northwest Illinois, really good snowfall in southern areas of Wisconsin. So between the rain and the snow, there were some areas that easily got well over 3 inches of rain. So this is why I still think going into the growing season, we're really going to be in good shape, because the pattern is still one of high variability, but yet high moisture content, which is good. And as long as the ground doesn't stay too frozen in some areas, some of these storms that have come through, I'm still thinking that this pattern is a real good one for bringing us a nice heavy rain, heavy wet snow into late February and late March, which is I think the best time of the year to get that kind of precipitation.
So in the short term, what are we looking at here in Chicago? We've got are we going to get measurable snow today?
Probably non-measurable snow today. Maybe if we get a half inch or anything, that should be about the max we get. What's happening is this large polar vortex that I think we kind of alluded to a couple weeks ago that was sitting up over the top of basically North America, well, I should say the Northern Hemisphere, kind of split into two. And part of that kind of moved southward into North America, obviously Canada and southern areas of Canada, northern sections of North America. And what it did was it took the flow that was generally moving primarily from west to east, kind of from the northwest to the southeast. So we've been getting more of a northwesterly flow of air into the northern part of the United States. And really, if you look at temperatures across the northern plains in the southern Canada, it's been really cold up there. A couple of days ago, International Falls, minus 39. Grand Marais Lake up in northern Minnesota, almost minus 45. These are air temperatures, they're not wind chills, and that's pretty cold stuff. It's not record, but it's pretty cold stuff. And I think also when you get snow on the ground, it obviously makes a huge difference. I think everybody can agree that walking around yesterday was like, you know what? It's cold. And you get that snow on the ground, you get that wind kind of blowing, you get that non-sunny, you know, day where you have the clouds coming in. It's chilly out there. So there's definitely been a kind of move towards much, much colder air. It hasn't gotten that far south into the, you know, into the lower 48. They've had their little bits of cold air here and there. But this kind of the pattern, what happens, you get these little Alberta Clippers. And Alberta Clipper is basically a fast-moving storm system, kind of like the Clipper ship, that generally tends to have what we call a maritime polar air mass kind of mixed up with an Arctic air mass. They usually generally form eastern sections of the Rocky Mountains from like Wyoming northward up into Canada. So these systems don't have a lot of moisture with them, Mike, but they provide you with enough 1 to 2 inch snow cover, maybe every 3 to 5 days, where all of a sudden you go, you know what? We got 6 inches of snow in the ground. Where did that come from? And so after we had the 2.3 yesterday at O'Hare, which actually turned out to be the heaviest snow of the year, which is really strange. You have to wait all the way to the 2nd of February to get your heaviest snow. And then we'll get another inch and a half probably tonight in the city, and maybe further north, maybe 2.5 to 3 inches. And then maybe another quick shot Tuesday before things begin to kind of quiet down a little bit. So you keep kind of carving out the base of this huge upper trough and you get these little snows, which is typical for early January, not February. But again, as we said, Mike, the months seem to not really fit the calendar of weather anymore.
No.
So the question is, what's the new norm? I don't know what the new norm is. It's definitely not anything that we've ever seen before.
And are we kind of locked in for the 24th of February to have you come to the studio?
We are locked in on the 24th. I'll be looking outside my window at about 8:30, waiting for that limo to come up.
Okay.
I guess the limo these days that you use is called North Shore Taxi, but I'll take it anyway. Anyway, I get it. But
okay.
Yeah, I'll be there bright and early in the studio talking to anybody that wants to call in about weather. I guess we're doing this from you tell me from what time to what time.
We're going to take the whole first hour, the whole 9 o'clock hour on February the 24th is going to be devoted to weather and climate because, you know, with this cold weather now, you're going to get those knuckleheads out there saying, what global warming? What are you talking about?
Yeah, and you know, the thing about it, Mike, is, you know, you still look back at it was 2 years ago. Today we had our Groundhog Day blizzard of 2011. We had over 20 inches of snow. And it was amazing. After that, we had basically no winter for the rest of the year. So
yep.
It seems to come in bunches, and hopefully the bunch coming up in a couple of weeks will give us something good to talk about as well.
So on the 24th, get your weather questions, get your climate questions ready. Mr. DeMaio, a rare studio appearance, and I'm very excited about it. I think it's going to be really fun.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks a lot, buddy. I hope you feel better, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, the cold is finally going away. Talk to you next week.
All right. Bye-bye. In the second hour, this fucking weed wars with attorney Brett Rappaport. We've been following Kathy Cummings' fight with the city, and we're going to talk about those municipal weed laws that make sense and those that don't. Stick around.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Sing a book of matches, gonna burn what's standing in the way. Running down the mountain, another calling on the fire brigade.
Welcome to the second hour of the Mike Novak Show. I hope you're listening. Well, you know, you could be listening on the AM, A&M and the FM, and we've also got
.com&N.
We got .com&N. All right. You can go to MikeNovak.net and get the live stream there, or you can listen on 820 AM, 92.5, 92.7, 99.9 FM later in the day. My apologies to the podcast people who listen on podcasts, because I got this week's up a little late, you know. I was busy trying to keep my basement from being flooded, okay?
So that, well, and you had a busy week normally, too.
Yeah, it was
you
pretty,
were working
pretty crazy.
You had fun thing on Monday?
The fun thing on Monday.
Didn't you have an all-day recording?
Oh, right. No, that was the week
before.
That was my birthday.
That's right. The legal conference, right? I should just, you know, talk about legal conferences. I've got Brett Rappaport, who's an attorney here in the studio. And Brett, it's a pleasure to have you. I was making reference to the fact that occasionally I videotape conferences for the Illinois Institute for Continuing Legal Education. So, yeah. It's a way to keep body and soul together, and then I get to hear all kinds of interesting legal conversations. Some interesting, not so much, depending on what they're about. But I wanted to get back to a tweet here that came in regard to our conversation in the first hour, and Sarah Batka noticed it too. And by the way, Sarah Batka in the studio, Lisa Albrecht, Denny Sheeter, the whole team is here. Rob, where's Rob?
He's out helping our photo.
Rob Carthold photo is here today as well, and otherwise known as
Cope Dog.
Hello.
Woof. And we got a tweet from Casey Tomato. Hey, Casey Tomato. Glad you're tweeting. I don't know if you're listening, Casey Tomato. I hope you are. Who writes, there are many open-pollinated tomatoes that have fusarium and verticillium resistance, not just hybrids. And when that got tweeted, Sarah kind of went, ooh, and you started looking around. I'd love to know exactly which varieties, because I don't know. And I'm sure there's people out there who know that. So I hope we get some information. You can post it on Twitter at Mike Now, or you can go to Facebook, go to the Mike Novak Show, and put it up there. I'd love to know those varieties.
I'm looking. I'll see what I can find.
Yeah. And Sarah, meanwhile, is going to be trying to track some of that down. Those of you who listen to my show regularly know that on the 23rd of December, I had a conversation with a woman named Kathy Cummings, who is a gardener in Chicago, and who planted... had a garden in her front yard that still has a garden that consists of natives. And that in 2004, she won the Mayor's Landscape Award for Most Naturalized City Garden. And then in October of last year was hit with a $640 fine for growing weeds. How does this compute? And it does, actually, because the guy I have in the room right now has been dealing with these issues for a long time. About 20 years, right, Brett?
Yes, about 20 years.
Brett Rappaport is an attorney, and he is also an adjunct English professor at Dominican University. He's a partner with the Chicago law firm of Hart, Stern, and Cain. Nationally recognized for knowledge of and commitment to the preservation of our natural heritage by educating about native landscapes, wildflowers, and prairies. Well, where do we start here? I am following this case. Folks who have been following it should know a couple of things. And one thing that you can help me with, Lisa, is that I had somebody post a link on my Facebook site about a page where you can donate to this cause if you want to help defray the costs of Kathy Cummings' fight with City Hall. And if you go back, I'm going to find that name, and if you see the post, hold on just one second here. I have too many folders and too many things open. Here we go, weed ordinance. That would be from, I had it a second ago. Okay, maybe I don't have it here. Here it is, the fund raising. It's Tabitha Tripp is the one who posted on my Facebook. And she's got a website where you can donate to the cause if you want. And I know that people who were listening said they wanted to help out with that. So Kathy has appealed. It's cost her an extra $317 to do that. So the total is up to around $950, assuming that
she loses this case. She's also been sending FOIAs to the city of Chicago. If you don't know what that is, it's Freedom of Information Act. She's been sending those requests to try to get information about who reported her. Can she get that information?
She should be able to get that information.
Because she told me she sent to the Department of Streets and Sand the FOIA to find out who reported her, and they said nobody.
There's two ways that you can be cited. One would be a neighbor complaint. The other would be Chicago actually has weed commissioners who drive around and look for what they perceive
as weeds. So somebody, the weed commissioner was out there probably.
Correct.
Right. So, I think that's kind of a good thing that you don't have to feel like a neighbor ratted you in about that. And ratting in is one way of putting it, because what we're dealing here with is the idea of what is good for the neighborhood. Is it a lawn with the attending chemicals and sterility of the environment, or is it a natural area that might grow a little larger and some people consider weedy? So this starts, let's do a little history here, because I know you've written about it. I've got some links on my website, mikenovak.net. If you go to this week's show, you can see some of the stuff that Brett's written about it. In fact, you have a piece that's up on the EPA Green Acres site. Apparently you wrote for the John Marshall Law Review.
Yes.
Why did you write that for John Marshall?
Well, to go back in time, back in the late 80s, I was a volunteer with the Sierra Club Lawyers Roundtable. Sierra Club Lawyers Roundtable was a group of attorneys who'd meet once a month, brown bag lunch, and people in the Chicago who had environmental issues that they thought lawyers needed to address would write letters or call in. One of them was a gardener, much like Ms. Cummings, who was being prosecuted for growing native plants. I took the case, investigated, learned that there's a whole world of native plant gardeners in the late 80s who were being prosecuted for violating Chicago's weed ordinance. So we filed a federal civil rights lawsuit arguing that the Chicago weed law was unconstitutionally vague. It did not define the word weed. We got a lot of national attention. We were written up. The case ultimately lost on a technical basis, but we did get a lot of positive press and a lot of exposure to the issue. From that, I started getting lots of calls from around the country, turned into a letter. The letter turned into a longer letter, and then I sat down one summer and wrote a 100-page law review article to actually put something out there to help homeowners, village officials and stuff understand the legal issues involved and the ecological issues involved. So that was published in 1992. And the U.S. EPA read it and posted it on their website. I think it's been there for about 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations on that. And I looked it over, and it's pretty thorough, and it takes us through the history, not so much of why we love lawns, but the history of this movement. And at the time, the movement to allow naturalized spaces. Excuse me. And you described it as of that time that we were and in some of the other articles that I've seen you write, and most of them were published before the turn of the century, which is a weird thing, a weird turn of phrase, isn't it? Yet this issue still persists. We could go into why we love our lawns, and part of it's been a PR process that's been going on for 150 years. Started basically with one man and spread throughout the country, especially with the invention of the lawnmower and then the advent of chemicals that would hold things and our innate neatness. The idea that neatness is godliness or next to godliness, and we've transferred that to our spaces and there's just all kinds of anthropological and social ramifications of this, but the point being that we have begun to get away from that, and you wrote about it 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happened in the interim? We're obviously Kathy Cummings got a ticket, so this is still going on in major cities, even one like Chicago that wants to be the greenest city in America. And they love to throw that line out there, the greenest city in America. So when you go finding people for growing native plants, how green are you?
Well, it's really, you got to look back at the evolution of this. And with respect to natural landscaping and native plant gardening generally in suburban and urban environments, it's been a gradual process. The idea is that any idea that challenges the norm is first met with ridicule. It's then met with a discussion, and ultimately, if it's meritorious, it's met with acceptance. And you can look at the civil rights movement, democracy. And I'm not equating native plant gardening with those.
But, I'm allowed to do that. I'm the radio guy. Okay,
you can do that. But John Stuart Mill pointed out that this is the progression of ideas into practice. And native plant gardening in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and into the 80s was certainly met with ridicule. The 90s, President Clinton adopted a memorandum for federal facilities to have native plant gardening. So everything from post offices to Army bases have to incorporate native plant gardening. And it really ushered in a generation or a period of discussion. And that discussion phase, I believe, is transitioning into an acceptance phase now. I think Kathy Cummings' situation and others are becoming fewer and fewer. And I think the lesson is to understand that you can native plant garden, should native plant garden, but that you're still part of a neighborhood. I don't know the specifics of her case, but I do note that and I looked this up last night, the Chicago City Department of, I got to put my glasses on here, the Department of Streets and Sanitation has interpreted the Chicago weed law. And the Chicago weed law hasn't changed in 30 years. It says cannot have weeds on your property in excess of an average height of 10 inches. Does not define the term weed.
And it says average. I want to know how you determine average.
Right. So it's hopelessly vague. And it's been used over the years to deal with everything from vacant lots to native plant gardeners. Well, In the 90s and into this century, the city has promoted native plant gardening. And in fact, in 2008, there was a rule promulgated by the Department of Environment, which put some contours on the Chicago weed ordinance. I don't know if Ms. Cummings brought this to the attention of the judge or whether she even knows about it. I can read it if it would help.
Sure.
The ordinance basically states, and it's pretty short, this isn't the ordinance, this is the rule, and rules put contours on ordinances. Whereas the city of Chicago promotes the use of native plants as a means to conserve water and reduce carbon dioxide emissions. And whereas, while promoting the use of native plants, the city wants to continue to require property owners and persons in control of property to manage and maintain vegetation on their property. Now, therefore, and then they adopt an ordinance which specifically states that weeds or weed means, and here's the critical part, vegetation that is not managed or maintained by a person who owns or controls the property on which all vegetation is located and on which exceeds an average height of 10 inches. Now, what that means and the key words in there, and again, I'm a lawyer, but the key words are managed or maintained. So what the city has done is they've taken their broad, vague weed ordinance and they have put a qualifier on it. And the qualifier is if you're growing native plants and you manage or maintain them, you're not in violation of the weed ordinance. And the question obviously becomes, what is managing and maintaining?
Yes. And that's a very good question, because one of the whole precepts about natives is that they kind of take care of themselves. That, for instance, you know, you can people do prescribed burns. They'll cut down prairies, but it's not like a lawn where you have to mow it every week just to keep it in line.
But that doesn't mean that it's not maintained. And And I think, you know, one of the easiest things I've come up with over the years is an acronym, a five-part plan to maintain and monitor your native landscape. And it goes under the acronym BRASH, B-R-A-S-H, BRASH. Each one of those stands for a practice that a homeowner can do. And my experience has been over the last 20 years that regardless of the municipal ordinance in effect, if you follow the BRASH formula, the likelihood of being prosecuted is remote. And in fact, you can become a missionary in your town and promote native landscaping. So I can go over those with you if you wish. And
well, what does BRASH stand for?
BRASH stands for border, respect, advertise, start small, and humanize. And each one of those, we can go over and I can explain how, if you follow those five steps in implementing and maintaining your natural landscape, you will avoid almost for certain not only the weed police, but you will become the highlight of your neighborhood.
Well, I'll tell you what, I do want you to go over some of that. In the meantime, I'm sure other people have questions or comments and might have experiences of their own with their municipalities, not just the city of Chicago. 773-763-9278 is our telephone number, 773-763-9278. Don't forget, you can also tweet us or write to us on Facebook join the conversation. So, Brett, yeah, let's get into that a little bit, because, and then I have some questions about natives in municipal settings. But let's go ahead with the BRASH.
Sure, sure. The first, and you touched on this a little earlier, Mike, was border. Humans need, like, desire a sense of a border, and whether that's a hem on a skirt or a frame around a picture. You know, if I came into this studio this morning and there was paint splattered all over the walls, I'd call the police and think it was vandalism. But if you took that exact splattering of paint and put a frame around it and hung it on the same wall, I would come in and I'd go, oh, it's a Jackson Pollock painting. And why do we see things differently when they have borders around them? Because they have a sense of intent and they look like they're supposed to be. Well, if you take that psychological concept and apply it to your yard, you create a border around your native landscape of either bushes or short grass or a fence, split rail fence, stones, and people see it as a intended landscape. They may not like it, but the fact that it's intended means that they will accept it. So perhaps of all of the five elements, border is the most important. It also has a practical standpoint, because if you set back your native landscape from your property lines a little bit, the big plants aren't going to lop over on your neighbors and driveways and sidewalks, and that would be a good thing.
Yeah, that seems to be one of the ones, and I think I must have read it in your article, that a setback often solves the problem.
Absolutely. And many progressive weed ordinances have setbacks. You can have a native landscape as long as you have a setback of 3 feet or 5 feet or 2 feet or whatever it is. And and that's creates that tended and intended look, and is also stops the lop-over problem.
Okay. And then the next one is respect.
Respect. It's important to respect the rights of your neighbors. We don't live on an island by ourselves. We're not Robinson Crusoe. We can't do anything we want. And you need to understand that your neighbors have a right to their Kentucky bluegrass lawn and geraniums, just like you have your right to, you know, coneflowers and cup plants. And if you respect people, generally it becomes reciprocal. They'll respect you.
Okay. And that's just as I've run into this before with tree issues. And it often boils down to, you know, somebody's got a tree growing in their yard and it overlaps into somebody else's yard. And they say, well, what recourse do I have? Well, technically, you're allowed to lop off the branch at the fence line. But if you do that, you've just made an enemy. So when you talk about respect, it's can you communicate? Can you actually have a little dialogue with the people you live next door to so that you don't have to do that?
Right. And I found in many cases that self-righteousness, whether it's a natural landscaper or you know, this is my land, I can do what I want with it, is not a good way to accomplish what you want. You may make a point, but you're going to create enemies. And, you know, a little bit of sugar goes a long way. Okay. Respecting your neighbor is very important.
All right. E is, again?
A.
A. Sorry, a. That's brash. B-R-A.
Brash is for advertise.
Advertise.
Advertise. You're on radio. You know all about advertising. Advertising is real important. It is important to let people know what you're doing, why you're doing it, and that it's a good thing. And this takes two forms. One, it's important to let your neighbors know. There are dozens of beautiful native plant coffee table books out there. You can give your neighbor one of those for Christmas and show them what you're doing and why you're doing it. And the other way you do it is you put signs in your yard. You know, you got this native landscape that's my garden, and it's all overgrown and everything. And someone's walking down the street, and they go, "What is that big mess?" And then they come along and they see Brett's wildflower garden, a little piece of heaven. And they go, "Oh, I see why he's doing that." And they accept it. Mm-hmm. You need to tell people why you're doing it. So Wild Ones, the organization I'm affiliated with and on the board, has a sign, yard sign that says it. The National Wildlife Federation has a program with a nice aluminum sign where you can declare your yard a wildlife habitat. Those are very, very important.
You know, and I'm thinking of these, in the last couple of days, I've read a lot of stories about this, and it goes back to the advertise and the respect. There's the one, I don't know if you wrote about it or somebody else sent me a story about the couple that lived in Will County in a cul-de-sac.
No,
that's not you. Okay. You're okay. Because they had problems because they were in one of these suburban cul-de-sacs and everybody had the nicely cropped lawns and they decided to go native. And all of their neighbors freaked out. Not all of them. Some had said, "Oh, it's interesting," you know, and others freaked out. And it sounds like there wasn't a lot of communication there. So they didn't advertise. They didn't say, "Here's why we're doing this." They didn't consult with the neighbors and say, "You know, they just kind of plopped it because they took that, as you said, self-righteousness of this is our property and we can do any damn thing we want with it." And as a result, it's created havoc in the neighborhood. So that's why this communication is so important.
Absolutely. And the advertising can be fun. I've seen everything from very official looking signs to, you know, kids doing signs. I've seen schools that have, or people, in fact, in my yard, we've had, when my kids were little, they're grown now, we had their kindergarten class over to our yard. That's a form of advertising.
It's like teaching kids about recycling.
Right.
You know, kids know that you should recycle and wonder why you throw stuff away. Now, they should also tell their parents, "Well, how come we don't have milkweed? How come we're not helping the monarchs?"
Right. Exactly. So advertising is critical. Critical.
All right. And then S.
S is for start small. This has two components to it. One is three components. One is a cost issue. You want to start small because it's expensive to do your whole yard landscaping all at once. Second issue is an ecological issue because everybody's yard is a little bit different. The soil in the front of my property is actually different than the soil in the back of my property. It's a whole different soil. You need to learn to understand your microclimate, and you need to know what works and what doesn't, and so you have to start small. There's also a psychological and sociological reason for it. By starting small, you creep up on your neighbors. When we moved into our property in the mid-80s, it was Kentucky bluegrass lawn with a couple of flower beds in the front yard. Well, we took out the non-native flowers and put in cone flowers, and over the years we made the flower beds bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger to the point at which our front yard became a native prairie with lawn paths rather than a lawn with native plant flower gardens.
And actually that's fun. That's kind of the way my backyard is, where I have garden, not as, and mine's not all native, okay? But I have grass paths through it, And I like it because I can walk in my bare feet.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, and it, there's, and you mentioned before the border, that's a border.
Yes.
You know, when you see a path and that's groomed, people go, oh, this is being taken care of. This is, this was intentional.
Absolutely. And the starting small is a very important way to do it. And it ties back into all of the other ones. It ties into being neighborly. It ties into advertising. You know, and it ties into respect. The last one is H, and that's humanize. And that's the recognition that we live in a people landscape. You're not growing this in a federally designated wilderness. This is, you know, in the middle of a city or the middle of a suburb or even in rural areas, it's still a people landscape. And humanized is everything from a path to benches, bird baths, signage, any kind of thing that says that humans are welcome in that landscape. And like I said, a path that curves a little bit with a bench goes a long way to saying to people, you know, you're welcome in my yard. Come in.
You know, it's interesting, and I think I mentioned this on the show the other week. I saw something from Audubon nearby where they did and continue to do experiments with shrubbery in an area, and they had a thicket. They had an area where it was all thicket. Then they had an area where they took out some of the thicket and they had paths and open areas. And actually, the wildlife likes that better than continual thicket, because sometimes the wildlife likes to keep an eye out and see what's there, what predators might be about. Right. So,
in ecology, it's called the edge effect, and edge effect is very important. There's many more species on the edge than in the middle of a forest. But from the standpoint of a native landscape in a small urban yard, it really is about showing that we want you to come into our yard. It's this sense of welcome. And it creates each one of these five elements creates a challenge and an opportunity for the landscaper, for the homeowner, to try and incorporate these things. It's actually fun. It's much better than just, you know, growing side to side, front to back, tall native plants and letting it go. That's not the way to do it.
Well, it's not elegant. For one thing, I mean, we love elegance, and elegance can be in many forms. I'll give you an example. Jack Pizzo, who is a restoration ecologist, and I went out to his prairie last summer shooting a segment for my Dig In Chicago TV show, and he's got this big swath of buffalo grass, and it's this big open area right in the middle of his prairie. Now, buffalo grass is a native grass, but it looks like lawn, right. And it is lawn. And it's surrounded by the prairie, and it's beautiful because it gives you some perspective on the prairie as well. You can stand on the lawn and look around at the prairie, so it makes total sense.
Absolutely, and from a design standpoint, from a functional standpoint, I mean, I have an acre and a half in Deerfield, and I have four children growing up. We needed some lawn. I mean, the kids needed to play ball and run and that kind of stuff, and they can't do it in the high prairie. Now, at the same time, I had woodlands and I had prairie, and my children were greatly affected by it. My oldest son, Jeremy, is a wildlife biologist, and I think a lot of that has to do with not just him and his dedication, but also, you know, exposure to a natural area in his home.
I'm a wildlife specialist myself, but wildlife is, I use it in a different way. Anyway, never mind. It's a function of going to school in the 70s, I guess. That is Brett Rappaport. He's an attorney with Hart, Stern, and Kane, also adjunct English professor at Dominican University. That's why he's so well-spoken. It's the English part of it. And you're speaking on Tuesday.
Yes, I'm speaking Tuesday night. The organization I'm affiliated with is Wild Ones Natural Landscapers. It's a native national native plant organization. We have about 4,000 members around the country, about 50 chapters. And one of the chapters, the Lake to Prairie chapter, is hosting me at the Fremont Public Library. I'm speaking, I think it's at 7:30 on Tuesday night.
It brings up an anecdote. I can't resist. about 10 years ago when I was at Gargantua Radio down the dial in the Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue, and I had Suzanne Malik McKenna on from the former Department of the Environment in the city of Chicago. And we got to talking about Wild Ones, and she was promoting Wild Ones, and she said, she was at a computer there, and I was broadcasting there, and she said, oh yeah, let me tell people they should go to Wild Ones. And she typed in wildones.com or something like that in the computer, and suddenly a bunch of porn sites started popping up, and she freaked out. She said, and I said, well, what's going on? She was just pointing at the screen, and I went, and I unplugged the computer. This is all I could think of. I just yanked the plug out of the wall, and we realized that it's easier today because you can type Wild Ones into your
Google,
or your engine search engine, whichever you want, and especially the chapter that you're talking about, and it'll take you right there. Or you can just go to my website, MikeNovak.net, and I have the link.
Well, the website is
to the Lake to Prairie chapter of Wild Ones. It says right there, Lake to Prairie. You don't have to be as scared. It's amazing how much everything has changed in 10 years.
When we did that, we had to get a URL that's www.for-wild.org.
Yes, I remember that, forwild.org. So
Wild Ones was already taken. Yes.
Yeah.
it's also a motorcycle gang in California.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
The things you learn.
Yeah.
I know the things you learn that you really didn't want to learn.
Accidental.
Okay? Our number again is 773-763-9278. If you got a question or comment, when we get back, I'm going to tell you about some stuff that I've gotten from some friends of mine in Indiana that I think you might be interested in. And I also want to talk about just your observations on this particular case and how it might be, what's the word that the lawyers use? Not adjudicated, but...
Resolved?
I don't know. That wasn't it. Isn't there another word for that? All right, whatever. Here's a tip from the care of trees. Trees are more than their business. It is their passion. As I have said many times, the care of trees shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of life. For their certified arborists, caring for trees is both a profession and a way of life. They contribute their time and expertise to the communities they serve, whether helping out on a town's landscape committee, contributing to tree preservation plans, or giving a talk to a local garden club. They're pleased to be the largest tree care company in the nation to earn accreditation from the Tree Care Industry Association, TCIA. The care of trees has always been committed to delivering the best tree care services to their clients. And now that longstanding commitment has been recognized by the TCIA. Invite the certified arborists at the care of trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com. Or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. They really are great people. The care of trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Yeah.
figured out what the word is, finally. Disposition is the word I was looking for. We're going to ask how, what the likely disposition of the case will be in Chicago. Of course, you can't know, you're not on the case, Brett Rappaport. He is here in the studio. We're talking about weed laws in Illinois and other places, because you've advised people all over the country, haven't you?
Yeah, I've spoken different places. In fact, I'm wearing my Berkeley shirt. I spoke at Berkeley a couple of years ago. So, yes.
And I had some great people out in Indiana. Steve Sass contacted me as I was talking about this case. Wrote this, which is kind of interesting. He said, "Hi, Mike. I'm the president of the North Chapter of the Indiana Native Plant and Wildflower Society. Have you dealt with them at all?"
No, I'm aware of them. I've not dealt with them.
"Earlier in 2012, we formed a committee to study the various county and municipal weed ordinances, and we've determined that almost all of the several dozen ordinances that we studied were horribly written and left no provision for the protection or acceptance of indigenous vegetation. With respect to your guest, we believe that vague and poorly written ordinances are to blame for most of the problems that people like Kathy have experienced. Had that ordinance contained a specific provision that exempted native plant gardens as being weeds, this case would have been easily defensible and wouldn't require an expensive appeal. Several of our members have also experienced similar battles with their municipalities, and one of our members went as far as to write a documentation about her experience with the city of Indianapolis for our state journal. Our committee has taken our initiative to the statewide level, and we are currently in discussion with the commissioners from one northern Indiana county that is considering adopting a weed ordinance to allow us to work with them in the wording of the ordinance so that situations like Kathy's don't continue to be a problem. As such, we have written a draft of what we believe to be a good ordinance, which we're hoping will serve as a template for other legislatures to follow. Thank you for bringing attention to this situation." And then he writes about several, apparently Lady Bird Johnson Wildflower Center even has a sample ordinance.
Yeah, there's a variety of sites. In fact, the Law Review article I wrote has a model ordinance attached to it. And the ordinances can generally range from a prescriptive ordinance, which says you may have native landscapes, but they must be this. And actually prescribe setbacks in that. Or they can be permission ordinances, which require a native landscaper to go in and basically have it approved by the city, you know, and submit a plan. And those are the permissive ordinances many natural landscapers take offense to, but I found they work pretty well because the city doesn't really reject it. They just want a way to distinguish between the negligent landowner and the intentional native landscaper. Mm-hmm. And the permissive ordinance does that. You go in and you get a permit.
Mm. So you have to, okay. I hate the word proactive, but...
getting a permit or getting a badge of honor, call it what you want.
Sure.
The point is that it's distinguishing you from the negligent landowner, and that's the point.
Yeah, and it was interesting because after Kathy went to City Hall to pay the fine, or at least to file for the appeal, she ran into a woman there who said, "Oh, you have to talk to this woman because she had the same problem." Well, the woman actually called me, and I talked to her, and I said, "So do you have natives in your yard?" She said, "No." I said, "Well, what's the story?" She said, "Well, I have this lot, and I bought this lot, and I got two fines, one for the weeds and another for not having a fence." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, what kind of plants are there?" She says, "I don't know. They're just the grasses." And I said, "Well, that doesn't, you know, I can't help you. You know, I'd fine you, too, for that."
Right. And the city has a legitimate public health interest in making sure that negligent yards just don't grow wild. That's not a native landscape.
But I do want to get, when you say mm-hmm. health interest, all right, let's get to that. Mm-hmm. Reading some of your articles, people have this belief that native tall native plants harbor rats. and they harbor mosquitoes.
Right.
Can we debunk that, please?
Absolutely. It's absolutely not true. First of all, with respect to rats, rats are not native plant, are not native species. They come from Norway. They don't live in grass. They don't breed in grass. They don't eat grass. They live in garbage. They live in old, rotted buildings. You may get mice, you may get field voles, but you're not going to get rats. And mice and field voles are not a health hazard like rats. With respect to mosquitoes, mosquitoes are a product of standing water. Native plants in natural landscapes actually drain water. The water soaks into the ground much, much, much better. A traditional lawn has a runoff ratio of about 95%. You might as well just have concrete. And water pools, and then mosquitoes breed. You have a native landscape, the roots of those plants go down many, many feet, and the rainwater is drawn into the yard. My yard, when it rains, nothing runs off my yard. Yeah. Nothing. Yeah. And in fact, my neighbor to the north, which flows down into my yard, his is all lawn, and his raging torrent of runoff comes into my yard, stops, and to the south, there's no further runoff. So I'm not only sucking up the rainwater from my yard, but my neighbor's yard to the north. So rats, mosquitoes, native landscapes.
And the final, pollen.
Pollen, absolutely not. Pollen is region wide, and most native plants are pollen is spread by animals, not by wind. Mm-hmm. Pollen that is spread by bees and those kinds of things is too heavy. Doesn't create the kind of airborne pollen ragweed that causes problems.
Well, have you heard of a guy named Tom Ogren who wrote a book called Allergy Free Gardening?
No.
Okay. He contends that we're doing the pollen thing to ourselves, thereby we plant all these males, clones of plants, and we create pollen corridors, and then we plant, and these are non-natives mostly, right. and we'll put these shrubs, where do we put them? Right outside the bedroom window, and that pollen floats in at night, and people wake up in the morning sneezing and red eyes, and they can't figure out why they feel terrible, and yet they've done it to themselves. And some people disagree with it, but he's touring Canada. I had him on not too long ago.
Interesting.
He's touring Canada and getting a database of those kinds of plants. And he's making headway because I think what he says makes total sense.
Right. Well, and from an ecological standpoint, the benefits of a native landscape to a traditional suburban lawn are a thousandfold. And, it's not just that native landscapes don't bring rats and mosquitoes and cause a pollen problem. It's that they bring beneficial creatures. It's that they reduce carbon because they don't have to be mowed. They reduce air pollution because lawnmowers are horrible, horrible air polluters. They don't have catalytic converters and those kinds of things on them.
Well, actually, in California, they do.
And, oh, do they? Okay.
Okay, and I followed this a few years ago where some of the major lawnmower companies were fighting that legislation, right. Just like the automobile manufacturers fought catalytic converters and seat belts and everything. This is the way we operate in this country. You fight anything that'll make us a little healthier, and then you lose in California, and then it spreads to the rest of the country.
Well, and people sit there and say, how can my little lawnmower be contributing to air pollution? Well, the simple fact is that your little lawnmower is one of millions and millions of little lawnmowers, mm-hmm. all setting off pollution every Saturday morning. My native landscape doesn't set off pollution because I don't mow it. So,
do you cut it back in the spring?
I burn it.
Okay, and you live in a place now. You probably have to file for that and register.
Yeah, there's and there's procedures to do. But I live in a pretty rural, remote, unincorporated area. I wouldn't advocate burning in the city of Chicago.
Well, that's a real controversy, too, because I wouldn't advocate burning in the city of Chicago. But that's the other one of the other myths is that native stands are more likely to cause a fire.
And that's false because native plants, first of all, when they're green, they don't burn. And when they're in the winter or the fall, they don't burn hot enough and long enough to actually create a hazard. A prairie grass burns pretty quickly. Second, if you do have the setback and the other kinds of things that I talk about, the likelihood of that being a hazard are remote.
All right, that's Brett Rappaport. I want to thank you so much for coming in. I would ask quickly, I know you're not involved in the case. Mm-hmm. How would you, can you offer any insight about how you think Kathy should proceed in this?
Well, I think that the interesting thing about Kathy's case is that every case offers an opportunity to educate. And I think that the thing Kathy should do is work with the city, find out what their specific concern is, and, cite to them the rule that I read and explain to them that she does manage it. Perhaps all they want is a setback. Perhaps all they want is for her native landscape to mostly be in the backyard rather than the front yard. My experience with the city of Chicago is they've been pretty darn good about accepting natural landscapes. So I think if she opens a dialogue with the city, perhaps the Department of Environment or the Streets and Sanitation, it may go a long way as opposed to battling in court.
That's kind of what I've been thinking, that it's an educational opportunity.
Yes.
That maybe we can go there and tweak the yard a little bit. I've proposed to her that we get a landscaper to look at it and say, hey, do this, this, and this. Now, she said she's been working with somebody, but if she has, it hasn't been effective. So maybe somebody else with a different eye needs to come in and take a look at it and make some proposed changes. And that way, everybody gets to save face.
Everybody gets to save face, and she creates a real asset for the neighborhood. I don't know what neighborhood she lives in, but, a well intentioned, constructive native landscape is a real benefit to a neighborhood.
That is Brett Rappaport. If you want to hear more about this subject, he is going to be speaking this Tuesday evening in Mundelein. Now, let me find that information here. You tell me. I can't find it.
It's at the Fremont Public Library.
Okay. The Fremont Public Library in Mundelein. And is it 6:30 or 7 that you're starting?
The meeting starts at 6:30. My talk starts at 7.
All right. So, and it's for free. If you've got weed or vegetation, are you all right there, Sarah? It's just
yes.
That was huge. I hope that you will stop by, and Brett, I hope that you stay in touch with the show, because this is not resolved yet, and I think we can afford maybe even to be more progressive in terms of the city of Chicago, and as you say, the wording's pretty vague. So
absolutely, there's always room for improvement, and thank you for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure. Have you ever noticed that gardeners ask a lot of questions? What's that plant called? How come my leaves have spots? Are they supposed to have spots? Where's my trowel? What's all this about pH? What's all this about natives? See what I mean? Those people need Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. In addition to all of the great articles in every issue, there are regular features that often answer those nagging gardening questions. For instance, in the January-February issue, the Q&A column, that stands for question and answer, the Q&A column answers questions about when to prune Caryopteris, hint, it's very forgiving, whether it's still possible to plant tulip bulbs indoors or out, hint, that train is already in another city, and how to keep herbs growing indoors during the winter. Hint, my buddy Dan Costa answers that one, so the answer is a good one. You'll have to pick up the magazine to get the lowdown. Then there's my column on the inside back page. Hint, it's not forgiving at all. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over town, or get a subscription. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Lido missed the boat that day. He left the shack, but that was all he missed.
Get ready for the riff here, Danny.
Coming back.
Okay, it's air instrument time on the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Yes, Danny?
Oh, hey, the air instruments.
Haul out your air instruments.
Oh, yeah, baby.
We got a tweet last week. I'm going to bust somebody. We got a tweet last week. Somebody said, you play too much music.
You're kidding.
Are you going to comment on that, Sarah? Is that was that one of your buddies there?
Yes, he's my VIP, Jerry. So you know who I'm talking to.
But I don't play that much music.
No, probably a total of 2 minutes combined on the 2 hours. Maybe not even that.
Yeah, maybe not. Mr. Rob K, we had a meeting last week. We talked last week about the big big Commie Garden FabCon, which is really not the name of it.
But we're going with it.
If you go to my website, MikeNovak.net, and you go to the homepage, you'll see this beautiful picture of a carrot. And it looks like a seed packet. That's just a lovely graphic that we put together for that. Who was it that did that? Do you have that information?
I don't have the information right now, but we do have a good team working on all of these things.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about, we got a couple of minutes here, but the big conference is 23rd at Chicago Center for Green Technology, and we'll be bringing in community gardeners from all over the city.
It's focused on community gardeners. What we really want to do is just have a conversation with one another about what can we all do to work together now that, you know, there have been a lot of changes in the city. The department environment is maybe not really there anymore. And some other organizations are maybe, you know, look like they're taking a smaller role, but we can still get together. We can still have plant giveaways. We can still do a lot of these things together that, you know, previously Green Corps or somebody else was doing for us. And I think it'll be a good way to go going forward where we can all, you know, step it up and start just helping each other out.
Right. And Ryan Thompson is the guy who put that graphic together. And I'm not sure who he works for exactly, but it's beautiful. Ryan, kudos. Nice graphic. So that's February 23rd. It's going to go like 9 to 3. It's going to be there'll be a panel.
Some workshops.
Workshops.
Networking, lunches.
Networking. And that's why people go to these things. They want to network.
Breakfast and lunch.
Really? So we did, you know, there was a big, you know, committee meeting last Wednesday, and I kind of stayed out of all those decisions that were being made.
The more food, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, if they want to bring food, that's great. So, and it's $5.
Suggested donation is
right,
$5.
Right, you don't even have to pay
so
that.
That's a suggested. You could chip in more. I'm all about chipping in more.
And it's called Connecting Chicago Community Gardeners, or as we like to call it,
the Big Commie Garden FabCon.
Yes. I think it's better. And by the way, there's a Eventbrite page where you can register for the event. I've got the link at MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. Look for the headline, Moving Forward on the Big Commie Garden FabCon, because that's what we call it here. And the other thing that's happening, there's still time to donate to Farmer John's Kickstarter campaign. Last week we talked to John Peterson, star of The Real Dirt on Farmer John, and the guy who started Angelic Organics and Angelic Organics Learning Center, and they're trying to refurbish the barn. It's a Kickstarter. If you can find the link at my website, MikeNovak.net, this week's show, or just go to Kickstarter and type in Barns Are For People Too. I mean, he's a great guy. And it's a really worthy cause. They do so much good work. You know, it's interesting. This one of the things we discussed at the meeting about community gardens. There are some for-profit ventures. Most community gardens are just
nonprofits.
And most of them don't even, they're not even organized formally. And then there are things like large nonprofits like Angelic Organics Learning Center. There are community gardens of all shapes and sizes in the city of Chicago. So if you're new to this, and I should go and see what Farmer John's got going there today. But if you're new to community garden and you're thinking, gosh, I want one for my neighborhood, that's going to be a great place to start.
There's specifically, I know there's a workshop on community organizing, which is getting gardens started, but it's also getting established gardens. You know, how do you keep new members coming in? How do you keep the machine rolling once it's there?
Yeah. All right. And Sarah and Lisa, you guys are just typing away all day long. You've got lots of good stuff on Facebook and on Twitter. For those of you who follow either, go there and see what they posted. You managed to find that list of heirloom seed companies, right, Lisa?
Yes, and I also posted up the companion planting, if you're thinking about seeds as well.
All right. So it's Super So Sunday. And on Super So Sunday, we say go green or
go home.